The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Okay, I am not Vina Jones Cox. But I do have a face for radio, at least that's what everybody tells me. So we are here tonight. We have got an exciting program. I mean, our guest has knowledge that spans everything when you're dealing with a flip, rehab, any kind of rehab, all the way to financing and, the works. So, tonight, just remember, call if you got questions, 877-772-9658. Or you can email vinaradio@gmail.com. We're going to talk about how to go broke on your first rehab. So with us tonight is Nicholas Kuhn, and this guy has just got some experience. Let me just...
Hello.
How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing well. Thank you for the kind words there.
Well, let me tell the listeners a little bit about you. So you're a seasoned real estate investor. You actually are a nationwide lender. You advise other investors on everything from rehabbing to financing investment areas. Over the course of your career, you've personally flipped, held, and managed multiple investment properties. You've financed over 500 real estate transactions for investors and homeowners across the country. I think that's amazing. And you really do like to help out investors, which is what this program is about. And investors face lots of things, you know, challenges of building rental portfolios. You can help them secure financing, structuring deals for long-term success. So you've got that hands-on background, right? You're not just theory. So this is great to have you here. You're based in Ohio.
Thank you.
And,
I am.
Equity Capital Mortgage Group. I appreciate you, volunteering to be on the show tonight. And you're going to provide some, that organization provides investor-friendly financing solutions nationwide. And you're just, this is your passion, and I'm glad you're on the show tonight.
Thank you very much. Yes, this is my passion. I love helping out people, I mean, and other investors, and I'm just fortunate to be able to do it, something that I enjoy doing. And I've been a part of this for the majority, of course, my entire life. My grandfather was an investor, a builder, developer on the construction side. So I got to see a lot of that growing up, carried that with me and, you know, and into my profession and what I'm doing now.
All right. So let's start talking about how to go broke on your first rehab. So we're calling it that. Why? Did you almost go broke on your first one? Is that what the deal was?
I mean, I came across a landmine on one of my first deals. It was, we're blind what we're blind to, especially in real estate when you're going into, you know, older homes, you know, a lot of times you're going into them sight unseen. You can only get so much out of the property when you're inspecting it, through your service providers. Time tells all, right?
Right.
For example, I'll tell you the scenario. I bought the house. Everything was going great. You know, and that in Ohio, you know, we get a lot of snow. And once the snow thawed out that first spring fall, I was getting water in the basement. It's like, oh no, this is not good.
No, that isn't.
So fortunately, you know, I bought right. You know, and that's the biggest thing that you can control is when you're going into a house is buying at the right price. And that goes with doing your homework on the market, seeing where houses are selling at, what the market is doing, what the houses are doing in that market. Are they appreciating? You know, is it a vibrant area? Are you going to have appreciation? And things of that nature. So because I bought right, and this was actually a house hack. My house had two units. It was a single family home, but it had an in-law suite with a private entrance on it.
Oh.
So the in-law suite is where we had the water. Fortunately, I had the wherewithal to learn how to, you know, to work on my basement, but I was able to pull myself out of that scenario, do the repairs on it, and then made it right.
Awesome. So tonight we're going to talk about everything in that process of getting that rehab, rehabbing it, getting the funding, and actually at some point, right, there's always an exit strategy, maybe keeping it, maybe selling it, whatever. So, with that in mind, when we start out, what do you think the most expensive mistake, because you've dealt with a lot of investors, what do you think the most expensive mistakes are, or the biggest mistake people make when the new rehabber comes on the scene?
Yeah. I mean, biggest mistake is not taking into account costs of the rehab and really looking at, holding costs and what that entails. So knowing, you know, where you're getting your funding and how much your monthly payments are going to be, taking that into consideration, the true cost of all the different phases of flipping the property in each room, et cetera.
Awesome. Well, we'll dig deeper into that. We're going to take a break. And just so everybody remembers, the 877-772-9658. If you want to talk to us, avinaradio@gmail.com. We'll be back in a minute. All right. Fortunately, we are in air conditioning and not in 91 degrees. I'm glad the air conditioning works. Hey, just welcome back, everybody. Before we get talking with Nick some more, want to tell you about two things that are coming up with Cincinnati RIA, the Summit Investor Help Night, which is actually tonight, Wednesday night, tonight at 7:30 p.m. The topic is Tap the Power Happy Hour. So you're just going to be able to do some more Q&A with some sophisticated investors, experienced ones, and it is a great chance to connect and network. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com, and you'll get the information on that. Also, on Saturday, that's this Saturday, the 28th, Dave Richter's Cincinnati RIA is going to put on a presentation that Saturday. So if it's really hot, good to be inside. Profit First for Real Estate Investors, an online master class. It's going to be good. You'll learn about systems and how to actually get to a point where you're actually keeping some of that money you make. So we look forward to that. So Nick, I think what you were really saying is that people get into deals and they really don't know their numbers.
Yeah.
And so... when we talk about know their numbers, what numbers do they need to know?
Sure. That's a great question. First and foremost, you know what your house that you're looking at is selling for in your market. And when you look at comps in the area, look at exact square footage, number of rooms, number of bathrooms, and year built is another big indicator that's going to give you an accurate number on what that house is going to be sold for if you were to buy it, flip it, and sell it on the market. So that's the first big indicator. If flipping is your desired outcome, that's the first thing you need to know. The second thing you should be aware of is if that doesn't go as planned, what if you have to hold it as a rental property? You know, how much is that going to bring for rent? And is that going to cover the cost of your debt? So So calculating the rental price and even short-term rental, because that's going to bring you more income typically. So having all that priced out and knowing what you can do in your market and knowing the numbers there, that is going to help you buy right and give you a proper state of mind going into a deal.
Do they need to be realistic? Because I've seen a lot of investors who just have this idea. You know, you talked about comps and things like that for a sale, but you also mm-hmm. look at the cost of operating and all that kind of stuff. Do you find sure. that, or are they doing that? What kind of mistakes are they making when they're trying to come up with numbers that just they're not realistic?
Yeah, you know, you got to take into consideration that, like, okay, if you look at what market rent is and what actual properties are renting for, like, are you going to price it too high and get, you know, constant turnover, or are you pricing it at a price where you're going to get a steady, reliable renter? Also, I see people that don't take into consideration taxes and insurance and maintenance on the property that are real costs that add up and, you know, determine if you're going to profit or not.
And I've also seen where an investor, if they're buying it on MLS or they're buying it through a person, they're taking their sort of pro forma numbers like it's gospel, right? Like that's the way that it's going to happen. And a lot of times I find that it's just not. For instance, real estate taxes, right? I had a friend who bought a property for $1 million. This was 30 years ago, but it was on the rent. Mm-hmm. It was on the tax rolls at 500,000.
Oh,
so then yeah. it goes up. And I've seen a lot of folks who like to do what they call drop and swap, right? Where you basically I'm going to buy your house as a, you're going to buy your LLC. If it's a mm-hmm. rental, you know, you're buying from somebody that has it in LLC. I'm going to buy your LLC and then mm-hmm. the county will never, you'd never find out about it. But the fact is they do. What do you say right. to somebody who says, well, as long as their property taxes are at this amount, I'm golden. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, calculating your numbers off of like a what if scenario, if you think you're going to outsmart somebody, I mean, you know, the county appraisers and those folks are really smart and they're going to catch details. And if they do catch those details and they see that a transfer of title took place, you know, they're going to hit you with taxes. So, you know, those scenarios are one-offs. I mean, unless you really know what you're doing and you have experience doing that,
right.
then, you know, tread lightly right. regardless, but always prepare for a worst-case scenario and if the worst-case scenario does happen.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, that's just icing on the cake, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what is an example of a number that investors might overlook or they fudge, they can totally just blow their deal. I mean, obviously one is the taxes we talked about just now, but
sure.
what are some others?
Cost of labor. Cost of labor has gone up so much. I mean, the amount of inflation that we've seen in this country in the past 5 years is astronomical. Cost of labor will really eat at your profit because, man, I don't know about you, but every project I've gotten into or a lot of them, it always seems to take longer than anticipated, right?
Yeah.
There's always something that you run into where it's going to go 10% over in time and or cost of materials. So taking that into consideration when you plan out, definitely calculate overage when you're going in and buying, right? And I know we've talked about these numbers. You know, everybody has their underwriting numbers they look at. I look at a property and I want to buy it at 70% of the ARV. And on top of that, I want to back out my costs to do the rehab and the renovation. So when you buy at that price point, you're leaving yourself a lot of room for the unknown and a risky transaction. And you're going to be pretty safe, you know, navigating it that way.
Good. I hear that we have a caller, Russell from Connecticut. Russell, welcome. What question do you have?
Hi, Ariel. Yes. Actually, it's more, thank you for that's called the AR, maximum allowable offer or amount, MAO. And I was saying I heard things as low as 60% minus the tariffs because, things that cannot, an inspector cannot see, i.e., water, like plumbing or electrical matters. I mean, yeah. I guess that they can continue that on. How might a buyer go about factoring that in? That could be huge, as well as only with roof and foundation are seen as the, like, I guess, top four largest possible expenses. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's another hidden variable in the equation is what's the electric doing? And that, you know, with electric, you know, you can take some time and explore every outlet, every switch. You know, you can really inspect those boxes and, you know, the fuse box, see what the wires are looking like. You know, that's something you can pay more attention to. And, so I highly recommend that. That's every light, every outlet in that case. With the foundation, look for cracks. You know, that's a key indicator that your foundation's slipping, and settling. Look at what the floorboards are doing. I would hop up and down on the first floor and see what kind of movement you're getting. If you're looking at older houses, you know, that's very real.
Yeah, you don't want the floor moving, huh?
Yeah. Also, right. Another thing is there anything that's totally, like when you say hidden variables, that totally cannot be mitigated or cannot be, approximated? Something like some bad wires in the wall or something. I mean, they're obviously not going to knock out all the walls and knock out all the, you know, expose all the plumbing, for example.
Sure. Man, the technology these days is wild. Like, I don't know if you've seen the cameras they're making that you can connect to your iPhone and you can peek in a wall or in a hole or some entrance. But if you, that would be a very inexpensive investment to peek at plumbing or electric that's out there on the market. If something looks fishy, obviously, you know, you're typically not going to go in and, well, actually, no, you should. I mean, when you get a property in contract and your due diligence period, man, go inspect your gadget on it and really look through all the different spots and areas. And honestly, when you mention water, it's funny. I'm glad you mentioned that because the best time to look at a property, if you can, is when it's raining, right? That's going to show you where puddling is going to be. If there's puddling in a yard, your downspouts aren't working, if water's running somewhere where it shouldn't be, you know, that's going to show you. And it could show up in the basement, run down walls. But, you know, if that problem is happening habitually and consistently, you're going to see, like, where in the landscaping and things of that nature. So look at buildings nearby. Like if there's a low point, you know, you can see if there's going to be flooding in a yard, you'll see that there's signs of moisture or mold or just wearing on baseboards in the basement. You know, look at the very bottom half inch. You know, that's going to show you some indicators of some water.
Well, Russell, I want to appreciate your call, and we're gonna take a break. Do call next week. You're consistently, you always call. I appreciate that. Really do. So we're going to take a break. Remember to call 877-772-9658 or email venaradio@gmail.com. All right, and we are back. Just a reminder, Investor Help Night is tonight. CincinnatiRIA.com for that information. It's a free Q&A. It's a great chance to get those questions answered that you've not had a chance to. And then Saturday, Profit First for Real Estate Investors, a great Saturday session to really help you keep more of your profit and actually take money out of your business. CincinnatiRIA.com. So we are talking how to go broke on your first rehab. Doesn't really sound very positive, does it? So we obviously don't want you to go broke on your first rehab. That's why we're talking about it. We're talking about those things that have to happen. One thing, Nicholas, I had a question on was I think people, before they even get to the point of they're making offers, they need to at least have a good idea of where the money's going to come from. So let's talk about money. New investors need to understand that they need that before they make a deal. They got to figure out where they're going to go, because you can't put it on a contract and then all of a sudden you got to go try to find money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And the crazy thing nowadays, I mean, there's so much money out there to buy real estate these days. I've been speaking with other tenured investors who are saying when they started, there was no money. It was tough to find money for real estate. But nowadays, I mean, investors and experienced investors like banks, they know how secure a real estate investment is. So they're willing to invest in it. So there's private money where you can go get, you know, higher rates, like hard money. And some private money lenders will give you 100% of the value and the rehab costs, because, you know, they know how to find deals and they're willing to invest in that. Now, if you're willing to go that route, I caution you, get an appraisal done up front, no matter what. And the reason I say that is as a long-term lender, you know, you got to look at your exit strategy, because if you're going to flip that property to an end buyer on the market and they're going to buy it with like an FHA loan or a government loan, you know, it's going to have to pass a formal appraisal. And if you get that done up front, that's going to give you a valuable market, you know, indication on how that property is going to price out. So if they do, and they could catch something that could be a deal breaker for you that you missed, or your property inspector missed. And at the end of the day, if you have to, you know, walk away from a deal and you lose $800 up front, it's better than losing thousands in a lot of time.
What's the danger, really? And so I have a lot of people, they'll say, well, I'm gonna buy this property. Maybe their exit strategy is not so good. But they make the assumption that they can get this thing refinanced.
Sure.
When they're all finished, what's the danger? What happens if they get it wrong?
Yeah, man, there's a lot of variables. There's so many variables in the transaction. It's so such a long time. But if you go over budget and on labor, on costs, and some unexpected events occur, and you're in over the 80% loan to value is the max you're going to get for a refinance, typically speaking, in a bank. So if you're too far into it and costs, you know, you're not going to qualify for that long-term refinance. And if that happens, you know, you can be stuck in some high interest debt. And if the market is not bringing what you need in rent to cover that payment on that debt, you know, that's when you can get in a sticky situation where you might just have to sell the property and take a loss. So really, really crunching your numbers on how much it's going to cost to renovate each room, your finishes, everything that is required to get that property to market condition is very crucial.
What is really the process that a new rehabber, you know, they're flipper, they're going to buy and hold. What is the process to line up that money? What are some steps that they need to take to get to that point of getting that money?
Yeah, absolutely. But look at where you're at. I mean, your down payment's typically going to be somewhere like 20%. You want to have 20% of what that loan amount's going to be, however much you're going to borrow. A lender's going to require an additional 10% to have in reserves for you to fund the work on the property. Because when you get a fix and flip loan, you know, you'll put your down payment. You want to have your reserves to fund the projects. Then you're going to be paid back on a draw basis. So you'll have to report the work that's being done. You'll get an inspection and or take pictures, send it to the lender, and then they will reimburse you. Then you can move forward on your repairs. So making sure you have plenty in reserves so you don't run out of money throughout your project. And also, you know, leverage credit cards when you do this. And do it wisely. You know, you don't want to go over in credit card debt, but you know, earning money on those points, it is a big financial gain when done correctly. So looking at all those key indicators of funding a deal, and, you know, sometimes you have to bring a partner in when you're starting out, and you might bring in a money partner. So going through all these strategies with, you know, your finances or your partner's finances, you know, that's key to getting qualified, you know, when you go and buy a flip project or investment property.
So it almost appears that if I were to take the sort of the steps, and I want to do my first flip, I need to make sure that I'm in good shape, that, and it doesn't necessarily have to be me, right? I could partner, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but we want to make sure we have those reserves. We want to find the lenders, maybe talk to them, and so that we know what they're looking for, so that when we're ready to do the deal, we don't bring them a deal that, you know, they're not going to fund. So
correct. Yeah.
So first you do that, and then you actually put an offer in on a property, and then the next step then is the due diligence. So let's talk about just sort of the steps of due diligence. What are some high-level things? We're not going to have enough time to get into every little detail of due diligence. But what are some the big major categories of due diligence that a person who's going to buy a property to rehab needs to do? They need to do their due diligence.
Yeah. So the biggest thing is have your due diligence team ready. Have your property inspector ready. And pay for the best property inspector in your area, because their experience, they've been around the block, they've seen multiple properties, they know what to look for, what's going to be deal breakers or potential deal breakers. That's going to save you a lot of money and help you price it out in your due diligence period, which is typically, you know, 2 weeks is what you negotiate into the contract. Also have 3 different contractors ready to go through the property. And I say 3 because, you know, somebody's going to miss something, somebody's going to overquote you, somebody's going to, you know, get it right. So, and you're going to learn something from each different contractor. Also, have your pull your title report on your property. That's huge. That's going to show you some hidden, you know, the unknown, where there could be a lawsuit hanging on the title of the property. There could be a number of different things that is tracing back on that title of the property. So that's a lot of the due diligence. You know, having your square footage of the house and knowing what price per square foot or what it's going to cost to renovate, you know, that's going to be a huge indicator in determining the cost of the rehab and how much you're going to put into it to get it market ready.
And I've seen people, and I am guilty of it. I am not a good rehabber because I decide midway through, right? You got this plan that you're doing, right? And then I decide, yeah. No, I'm going to go ahead and put in quartz countertops and I want to put in a better cabinet. And I hadn't planned on all that up front, right? And so now I'm at the end, you know, you said you've got a problem because you can't refinance it. So I guess, you know, if somebody gets in that position, they could sell it at a loss or could they just keep it and have money invested that they're not, you know, it's not a great investment, return on investment, right, at that point. But is that is that an option too?
Yeah, absolutely. Holding it and renting it out. It's definitely, I mean, it's a great option. And people, that's a lot of people's full investment strategy, the Burr method that's so popular out there. Because when you refinance and pull that money out, that's essentially tax-free money that you can pull out and that's your income. But like you said, with the quality of furnishings, you know, when you go into a flip, you want to see what's moving in your market and what you're going to flip it to or rent it to. You know, just copy and repeat what other people have done. You know, don't reinvent the wheel. If something's working in a market, don't second guess it. You know, see what the play is and just run it again.
That is a good. That's great advice.
Thank you. And also, you know, when you're putting your due diligence team together, make sure they're investor focused. Like a lender like myself has experience, has done it before. They're going to be able to give you insight on what it takes to, you know, be from an investor standpoint. You know, if you talk to, you know, a residential realtor or a residential financer, you know, they're just looking at big box numbers. You know, they're not going to be able to give you the full spectrum. And so just be weary and be careful on who you select on your team when you go to put together your due diligence.
Great. Hey, Joel from West Virginia is online, and we're going to do some questions then after break too. But Joel, welcome. What questions do you have for Nicholas?
My two questions. The first one is, where do you get your most accurate comps for a property you want to flip before you purchase it? That's question number one. That's question number one. And question number two is, how do you get pre-purchase repair estimates for contractor costs without a contractor to estimate it?
Yeah, those are great questions right there. You know, with the era that we're entering and have been living in the past year of AI, the super robots, essentially, man, I leverage them heavily. And any investment I'm looking at in underwriting, I start there. I type in the zip code. I look, you know, what's being flipped in that area, what are costs in that area for contracting, for materials, every question you can think of. Ask in detail, in depth. That's the main resource I use. I also, you know, I work with a good local experienced realtor. You know, they've been in the game for a long time. They're active. And look for people who are active in the market right now because they know what's going. And they have a large Rolodex of reliable contractors they've used, they've referred, who have good reputations. You don't have, you know, who are going to do you right and be truthful with you.
How about the comps?
You know, go ahead.
Oh, I said, how about the comps? Where's a good place to get comps?
You know, again, back to the technology. You know, the internet with AI will give you a lot of good comps. I use some specific software. You know, there's good programs out there that you can punch in your exact address, and it'll spit out comps to you. So a lot of tools online really exercise that, and that'll get you the comps that you need. And again, a realtor can help you as well as your local RIA meetup. You know, when you go and talk to other investors that are in your market, you know, there's going to be someone there that's willing to help you and show you what you need.
Great.
So if I'm doing something to get some numbers quickly, because I have to move very quickly to get this opportunity on this real estate purchase, sometimes I'll look at Zillow. Would you say that Zillow would be a good place for accurate, quick comps?
Man, you have to take that with a grain of salt, as they say. The county auditor, where those is a great place. So whatever county you're in, go to the auditor where those prices of sold homes are documented, and find houses directly in that neighborhood. I mean, I'm talking like one street over, and don't cross like a major highway. Like if you cross a highway, you know, the cost of homes is going to be different when you cross a major road. So look on the county auditor. That's the most reliable source, and look at in the hyper-focused neighborhood.
So Joel, does that help? We got to take a break, but we could come back if you want some more information. Good.
Yes, that'll help. That helps a lot. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for calling, Joel.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back and to talk with Nick some more. All right. Welcome back. So we have just under 10 minutes. So we're going to I do have two questions, one from Brad and one from Cindy that we're going to be a little bit more involved. But let me just get one question. First, let me remind everybody, Summit Investor Night, Help Night tonight. 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com. And Saturday, Profit First for Real Estate Investors. Go to also CincinnatiRIA.com. So one thing I wanted to touch on before we get into these two questions is we talked a little bit about partnering. We talked about those relationships. Why is it so important that folks join a local real estate group?
Yeah, if you're looking to get into the real estate investment game, you know, that's a great place to start, because it's experienced, tenured investors with a great reputation that they're there to help you out. You know, that's what I really like about the local RIA meetup I'm in is, man, I've made so many good relationships, and people are there to genuinely help you out. And that's where you can come across good deals and good partners that will get you, you know, the partnership that you need to get started.
Sometimes we, you know, you look at sort of a give and take. You try to help other people. So if I'm a new investor, right, what can I actually bring to an experienced investor as something that they would value?
Yeah, property management is a good way to get started. That's one way I got started with my mentor. I was managed the properties, learned a lot about the business there. You can do house or deal hunting, right? Go knock on doors at your own discretion. Go look for houses that are run down, essentially in distress. Bring and find deals that are find people that are willing to sell, and go to an investor who might just partner with you. And as long as you take a deal and present a partnership, if the deal is really good, you know, the money will follow. All the resources will follow when you find a good deal, a good off market deal.
So it sounds like too, partnering on your first rehab may be a good thing. Mm-hmm. They've got experience, things like that. Is there ever any time when it's a bad idea to not partner with somebody?
You know, it's a bad partnership can be based off, like, you know, if you get into a partnership for the wrong reasons, out of necessity, out of desperation, You know, you might overlook things, overlook character of that person. You know, always do your due diligence and research on whoever you're going to partnership with, and protect yourself. When you do get into a partnership, get a personal guarantee with your partner, because they can't hide behind a business or an LLC in court, you know, if a worst case scenario that does happen.
Gotcha. Okay. So with that, I have got two questions. One is from Cindy, and this is sort of about sort of responding if you think her metrics are good, because she wants to know, you know, what's the metric. So she's got an example here. Rentals to pay. So it says, here's what I'm doing, and none of it as well as I want to be. I want to do it as well, but I'm striving to do all the things that you are, which I think is great that she wants to strive. So one, rentals to pay my bills and have a legacy to pass on to my kids. My goal is cash flow, at least $1,000 a month per rental if it's paid off, $500 if there's a loan. So again, is that a good metric? I like a lot of equity, so I'm in, so I am to be in an all buying and fix up costs at 60%. She just wants 60%. Of value, but you talked about, you know, 70%, right? In the end, we would have an equity. So we'll talk about those two. And then for cash in the future, she wants to have a couple rentals in her Roth, but also doing loans, which again, you do lending. She's looking at investing in businesses too, but for chunks of cash now, it will be rehabbing and selling, since I have people who can rehab. So in other words, she's got a team that can rehab. So what about those metrics that she talked about first? Are those good metrics? Are they bad?
No. I mean, anything, I mean, better than 70%. 60% is a great entry point. You know, it depends on what your market is. Is it an appreciating market? If not, you know, you definitely want to be in, you know, 60% max on the cost of what the home is going to be based on the after retail value. So no, those are really good. Your mind is in the right place and you're doing the right thing.
Good. All right. So we have another question from Brad. So he lays out a scenario. So we'll sort of walk through that, and you can just sort of pick out any high-level items. We have about 2-3 minutes left. It says, I'm interested in purchasing a property through an online auction. I'd like some assistance running the numbers, as I am somewhat of a novice. Recent comps show recent sales in April for about $240K. The auction requires a $10K deposit, 5% buyer's fee. That's obviously to buy it. But he says, I think I can go as high as $200K. Retail value comps sold, $240. He says, I think I can buy as high as $200K bid. The finance I'm looking for, but remember, if he does a $2K bid, he has to pay that 5%. The financing I'm looking at is through a local investor-friendly bank, who I've worked with before. Terms are 15 months, interest-only loan at 10.5% with 15% down, which he would have that. Closing with the bank should be right around $3K. Lender will include rehab money. I like $20K just for any surprises and hope to use less than $10K of that. I have spoken directly with the previous owner of the house and have a decent idea what to expect. I know the roof is less than 5 years old, as well as HVAC system. No other major issues are expected. I'm hoping to go in and install LVT flooring and paint and then be done. So worst case scenario, he has some numbers. But just let's talk about we don't have a lot of time, but are his numbers realistic just from those high-level numbers?
Man, you know, those auction properties are tricky. I mean, you know, there's so much is packed into those. I would definitely run a title report on that, you know, especially, I mean, when you're auctioning like that, you know, you can get stuck in something that, where you overpaid for, and, you know, if you could get into the property, I don't know what the rules are in your local area, and view it. You know, from my experience, you're not able to enter the property. So, man, going into a property sight unseen, I know you spoke with the homeowner, so that's good. But yeah, I would cap my bid at 70% or less, to be honest with you.
Of that 240, of the 240 after he does the repairs, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, because the one thing I see is you're selling it for 240, because that's an example he gives later. Selling for 240, he bought it for 200, plus there's still closing costs, and
yeah,
your commission's going to be 6%. I don't know how with that you make. I really think you have to do what you said. You got to do it at 70% of the 240, but that 70% needs to include all the repair costs. And you are right, he isn't going to be able to get into that house potentially. So I guess one real quick question. We got to run. If somebody's going to buy their first rehab project, what's the one thing you want them to remember from this show?
Buy at the right price. Don't ever go above 70% all in.
Great.
Including your costs. You know, obviously there's outliers in every situation, but, buy at the right price and also protect yourself. Get insurance in place and install surveillance on your investment property.
All right.
I've heard multiple scenarios where the house catches on fire, and says it all right there. Like, you're going to get a lot of people, you know, walking around or in the area when there's a vacant house. So protect yourself with insurance, title insurance, et cetera.
Okay.
Feel free to reach out to me for any other questions.
All right. Well, Nick, thank you so much for being here. You're a trove of information. Appreciate your time, and everybody have a good week. See you next week.